Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
We are live. It is Monday, the 2nd of July. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Hour of Truth, and I am Dave. July 2nd, we just said that. I don't know how many of you realize it, but July 2nd is really Independence Day. On the 1st of July, in 1776, at about 10 o'clock in the morning, a fellow from Virginia named Richard Henry Lee stood up before the delegation of the Second Continental Congress and made the following resolution: resolved that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. What ensued from that resolution was about a day and a half of vigorous debate, and late in the day, on July 2nd, the Second Continental Congress voted 12-0, with the 13th colony, New York, abstaining. So, Declaration of Independence, the actual act of the Declaration of Independence, occurred on July 2nd with that vote late in the day. On the 3rd, John Adams wrote this letter to his wife, or wrote this in a letter to his wife. Yesterday, the greatest question was decided, whichever was debated in America, and a greater, perhaps, never was or will be decided among man. A resolution was passed without one dissenting colony that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states. And as such, they have, and of right ought to have, full power to make war, conclude peace, establish commerce, and do all the other acts and things which other states might rightfully do. And then on July 4th, the Declaration of Independence was signed. In those 3 days that centered around the 2nd of July, a new nation was born, a nation of people who felt they were totally independent of state, that all power of the state is derived from the people, that the state serves the people do not serve the state. One of the fellows that signed that declaration on the 4th was a fellow named John Witherspoon. John was a delegate to the Second Congress. He was from New Jersey. He was a minister and a devout patriot. He's quoted as saying, "A republic once equally poised must either preserve its virtue or lose its liberty, and then, by some tumultuous revolution, either return to its first principles or assume a more unhappy form." Six generations later, the great-great-great-great-granddaughter of that statesman, Mr. Henry Witherspoon, Reese Witherspoon, is the shill for the AARP in harping that we need not be independent, that we need to become more and more dependent on the state. Of course, she's pushing Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act. I'm not here to say that any one person ought to be just a mirror of their ancestors. But I am here to ask you, what happened to us that in six short generations, we went from a statesman who believed that every American ought to be independent of the state to a descendant of his who is a spokesperson telling us that every American needs to become more and more and now completely dependent for our very life on the state that he helped form? Now, the founders gave us one other thing besides an undying love of liberty, and that is a way to achieve this tumultuous revolution that Mr. Witherspoon said we have to get back to our roots. And we can now achieve this revolution without bloodshed and without loss of life. So here we are coming up to a primary election where we need badly the revolution that will take us back to our roots. We need to get our people together. We need to listen, folks. This primary election, August 7th, is the pass or fail of the liberty movement. And when I say liberty movement, I mean Tea Parties, I mean 912 groups, I mean fair tax groups, I mean all of the patriot groups. This is our pass or fail. We told a group of people when we took back the House of Representatives 2 years ago, here is your charter. You go do this or we will fire you as quickly as we fired the guy that you're replacing. Now, are we ready for this revolution or are we not? That's what this boils down to. We have a great show tonight. Bill Randles will be along. That, folks, is the National Minute.
I will be held accountable. I've got 4 years. If I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term proposition.
Jobs, taxes, traditional family values, education, protecting the unborn, Second Amendment, tort reform. These are the issues facing Missourians today. Hi, I'm Terry Barner. As your next state senator, I will continue to work to change government by preserving our liberties, reining in wasteful spending, and making the state of Missouri responsive to its citizens. I am a pro-life constitutionalist who believes our state and federal constitution are there for our protection from overreaching government. I firmly believe that only by ignoring those documents has the government at all levels been able to trample on the liberty of its people. I would appreciate your vote this August 7th. I'm Terry Barner, and I approve this message.
Ho!
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. It is Missouri Grassroots Radio. It is the Hour of Truth, and I am Dave. 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. Call and play in our sandbox. It's going to be fun. We've got Bill Randles dropping by here in a bit. We'll spend the hour with him. We want to go over once more the rules of how these candidate discussions, they're really not interviews, they're more discussions where we sit down and talk for an hour, just like we were talking across the coffee table. But we want to go over the rules of how this goes so that everybody understands. There are no gotchas in any discussion interview that I do. The candidate gets the layout, the outline, and if it's an interview, the specific questions that will be asked at least 48 hours in advance. They have time to go over it. They come prepared. The reason for that is because I'm not the gotcha guy. I am not the guy that the people who refuse to come here are afraid of. I'm not the guy that the establishment characters who will not appear on this show are afraid of, and I don't intend to be the guy. I intend them to be afraid of you. And therefore, I want to go with these discussions way, way beyond the talking points, way beyond the 30-second promotions, and get right down into the guts of who this person is, what their principles are, why they feel that way. We'll have Bill along in a minute, but for now, let's just review some of the things coming up on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Every Tuesday night, this is Monday night, this is our Hour of Truth, every Tuesday night, Vaughn Carricker comes along. Vaughn is actually co-hosting with me tonight. How are you, Vaughn?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. What you got coming up for us tomorrow night?
Oh, tomorrow night on Show Me Common Sense, we're talking about why are you pimping my kids? About fundraisers. Everybody hates them. Everybody does them. No one knows how to get off that carousel. So, tomorrow night, Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central on Show Me Common Sense.
And you just had a round with Bill, didn't you?
I did. I liked that man. I'm voting for him. I thought that was an interesting, very interesting conversation, and the great thing about it is he's a guy who tells you what he thinks and tells you why and provides you with facts and also tells you where he got them.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, I, as astute as you are with the history of this country, I know that you knew today was really Independence Day, didn't you?
You know what? I have not been as well educated as one would think. I did not know that.
Yeah, it was. So there we go. So Tuesday night, be sure and catch Show Me Common Sense with Vaughn Carricker. Vaughn is going to do the Are You Pimping My Kids segment tomorrow. And go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org sometime. Click on the button in the top that says Missouri Grassroots Radio, MCG Radio, and go listen to some of the other Show Me Common Sense episodes. Vaughn is a different kind of character. She gets right down in the street where conservatives work. None of this politics, none of the mumbo jumbo. I mean, yeah, once in a while she'll have a cool interview like the one with Bill Randles, but Vaughn is right down there in the streets. He wrote Veterans with Hope.
That was a great interview.
Bikers Against Child Abuse, the foster care programs, the Why Are You Pimping My Kids, these down in the street kind of things that are everyday real life things to conservative Americans. So we really enjoy these kinds of discussions that Vaughn brings on, and she usually spends an hour with a person and gets right down into the nitty gritty of that too. Then along on Thursday night comes Lisa Payne Nager. Lisa's the Culture Vigilante, and she does a show on Wednesday nights called The Culture Vigilante. Lisa talks with leaders of patriot groups. She talks with Missouri authors. She talks Missouri politics with the people who live with Missouri politics, not the people who are Missouri politics, with the folks in the groups that you folks are members of who live with the results of Missouri politics every day, and who, at the grassroots level, are trying to take this state back for liberty, back for freedom, back for some level of state sovereignty. Lisa has usually two or three people on a night. She usually entertains at least a couple of times a month Gretchen Logue, who is the education watchdog. Lisa's quite an education watchdog herself with a blog on homeschooling. She is a homeschooling mom, and then she also does a segment that's kind of interesting with Tom Martz from the Locke and Smith Foundation called Yankee Doodle Legislation, where they dissect pieces of legislation that really are just bell ringers. That is, it's not necessarily bad legislation, but it's not good legislation either. It's usually some kind of legislation that runs about the 70% level, Vaughn, up in Jefferson City, where it doesn't really do anything but give somebody a chest-thumping back home at campaign time. I'm the friend of veterans because I got all veterans a 20% discount on their license plates.
Oh, yes. That.
Yeah.
And as we all know, veterans all place license plates above jobs and medical care and even homes.
Well, that's right. And I wrote a blog on this just recently. I feel like I'm bragging when I say this more than once a week. But, you know, I'm a 25-year vet. Served my country for 25 years. I'm honorably retired, and I absolutely despise the pandering. I absolutely despise the, you know, I sorted out all the graves at Arlington Cemetery, so I'm a friend of vets. I got you a discount on your license plate. I don't even want to hear somebody tell me that they got me a little bump in my retired pay or a new VA hospital. The only thing that a serious vet wants from their politician is to know that that Constitution that I agreed, that I swore for 25 years to uphold and defend, that they are doing the same thing. They made the same oath, and all I want is for them to do the same thing. Do that, you've got my vote.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
now,
go ahead.
My understanding is that you've got a lot on your plate this week. You know, people have been angry about Obamacare all week long, and all last week, I think after Thursday, it was just bitterness. I see people being bitter about it, but I'm an optimist. I'm holding on to hope that we can turn this around. Are you still angry?
I'm very angry. I'm incredibly angry. I'm holding on to hope as well, but I'm incredibly angry. I am tired. You know, I've read all week long that John Roberts was anywhere from the Wizard of Oz for his finesse here to Satan himself. I don't know. I listened to almost every minute of the Senate confirmation of John Roberts, and I was impressed at the time. I don't know. We're going to be talking to Bill here in a while, and that's going to be one of my first questions because, you know, Bill's a litigator. He's a very, very sharp attorney, and I want to get his take on this. But my God, Vaughn, this guy sets – forget. I defined it as a tax. Forget all the other stuff. This court sets precedent for everything that comes after it. And they have just set a precedent that the federal government can mandate that we buy anything, any product or service, as long as they couch the penalty for not doing so in the form of a tax. Am I wrong?
And I think that's about what they said. But again, I'm an optimist. Courts set precedent, and then later courts back off and change direction. So I'm hopeful that with the help of the legislature and a new president, we will be able, and maybe a new Supreme Court justice, maybe we'll be able to turn this around.
Well, that's,
but until,
you know,
then, there's always the legislature.
That's right. I mean, the Supreme Court, and I believe you and I talked about this on Friday night. This Supreme Court is, you know, if you want to, I talk to these people all the time that say there's no difference between Obama and Romney. There's no difference between, and granted, sadly, in some places, there is little difference. But the next president is going to appoint three more Supreme Court justices. If he lasts 8 years, he may do four more Supreme Court justices. And it is imperative that not be Barack Obama.
I agree with you.
Okay, Bill's in the studio. We're going to bring Bill online now. And hey, Bill, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming. We're looking forward to talking to you.
That'd be great.
I don't think we've talked to you here at Missouri Grassroots Radio since the big deal on Thursday. What's your take there?
Well, I was listening a little bit to what you were saying, and I pretty much agree with you. This is a massive expansion of federal power. Historically, the outer boundaries of federal power had always been the Commerce Clause. In other words, if you wanted to justify anything the federal government did, The argument of last resort was the Commerce Clause. I call it legal duct tape. It can justify anything. What happened here was the court actually found that requiring the individual mandate was beyond the Commerce Clause, but fashioned a new boundary of federal power beyond the Commerce Clause, and that's the power for a punitive taxation.
Right.
And what the court has essentially done now is provided a blueprint from now on. Any intrusion the federal government wants to do into our lives, just make sure you include a punitive tax as your enforcement provision, and there's no current boundary articulated by the court. Unless they back off of this opinion, unless it's limited by subsequent judicial opinion, this could be the biggest expansion of federal power since the 1930s decisions on the Commerce Clause that upheld the New Deal. It's that big a deal. And, you know, the things I've read from conservatives suggesting this is somehow a hidden victory or Roberts playing a sophisticated chess game is just whistling past the graveyard. This is a disaster.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. And let me tell you, let me ask you this, because I've been toying with this. Vaughn and I kicked this around last Friday, so we disagree on it. Roberts said that because it was couched as a tax, the penalty, and left little doubt that it was, in fact, a tax, that it was okay. Now, is there a way that we can push this back up the hill one more time because it was a Senate bill and tax legislation must start in the House?
Well, it is possible that one could challenge it on that separate ground. I don't think that ground was briefed in the Supreme Court, so it's possible. The truth is, I think the court has given us a strong signal that they don't want to deal with this again, and I doubt they would.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get back to what we're really here for, and thanks for weighing in on that. I'm just incredibly angry myself. Why are you running for this job, Bill?
Well, sort of what's happened recently illustrates the problem. I just saw a pattern of increasing government involvement in our lives. I saw a government that was out of control with no boundaries in sight. And I saw conservative politicians doing a pretty good job at articulating what they're against, but not a particularly good job of fixing things once they were there. And I, you know, after listening to me argue with the television for a while, my wife said, "Why don't you quit talking about what you would do to fix things and go do it?" So after a lot of prayer and reflection, I decided to do just that.
Good. And correct me if I'm wrong, I've actually seen you three times, I believe, in various forums. Correct me if I'm wrong. We all sit around, we talk. There was quite a bit of talk in the last legislative session about state nullification, specifically of Obama. And there's a lot of talk nowadays that everybody's all up in arms about state nullification. But you come to the table now with some actual background and study and knowledge of how this thing works, right?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us about that.
Well, you have to be careful when you talk about things like state sovereignty and nullification to be clear what you mean.
Right.
The federal government controls the states in two ways. One is unfunded mandates, which means they just tell you what to do. That's a small minority. And then there's partially or completely funded mandates where they give you a check with a bunch of strings attached. That's the bigger problem. For example, education. People like to talk about how they resent the federal rules about education, but the federal government has no say over the state educational system except through the relatively small amount of federal money we take that has a bunch of strings attached. So one of the first things I intend to do as governor is say to the federal government, keep your money, we're not taking it, so you have no say here. We have to begin to rebuild our sovereignty one brick at a time. You can't just wave your arms and say, we're going to do whatever we want, tell the federal government to jump in the lake, when you're taking their money, because he who writes the checks makes the rules.
Now, let's be perfectly clear here, though, Bill. I mean, and I'm on your side with this, but let's make sure everybody understands that the federal government is then not going to come back and say to Missouri, well, okay, since you didn't take this money, we'll tax you a little less in Missouri. We're still going to pay the same tax, and now we're going to pay all that money in Missouri that the federal government is not giving us.
Well, that's right. But again, how much does your freedom mean to you?
Right, exactly.
The federal government has the power of direct taxation through the income tax. They're going to do what they're going to do in terms of collecting their revenue, at least in the short term. That argument is what has gotten us all hooked to the money. We've all said, well, they're taking too much, so we want to get our share, and our share comes with a bunch of strings. and the strings take away our freedom. So, yeah, we're going to have to stand up and push, we're going to have to push back from the table a little bit and leave a little bit of that federal candy on the table, because it comes with some very dangerous side effects. We can't do it to everything. I mean, 35% of our state budget is Medicaid. The federal government pays half or more of that depending on the year. We can't function without that in the short term. But we have to begin one area at a time, and I outline a detailed plan for this on my website, to rebuild the bricks of our sovereignty while we push back against the federal government in a larger way to try to get the right people elected there to shrink their share. But as long as we say, by golly, I'm going to get mine, well, getting yours means you also get all of the rules.
That's right. That's right. And interestingly, right along the lines of what you were saying, one of the things that the federal government was trying to do with this Obamacare, if you folks haven't actually read the decision yet or followed this thing from the get-go, was they were saying to the states, you have to accept this expanded Medicaid program. We're going to give you a little bit of money for it. And if you don't accept it, we're going to take away all the other Medicaid money we've been giving you. And that would have been devastating. No state would have been in a position to even say no to that, right?
Well, that's like the old Godfather line, make you an offer you can't
refuse.
And what in that part of the opinion, Justice Roberts got it right. He said these federal programs with the states are more akin to contracts, where you make a deal and you can't fundamentally change the nature of the deal. And this so-called Medicaid expansion, which isn't an expansion, it's a whole new program where instead of just certain vulnerable groups being eligible for it, everybody's eligible for it whose income is a certain level, and that level the federal government can manipulate all they want to. Roberts concluded this was a whole new deal, and the federal government can't jump out of the old deal into the new deal unless we agree. That was a good result, but it underscores the importance of the next gubernatorial race here in Missouri, because the next governor is going to be the one who determines whether essentially we wind up with socialized medicine here in Missouri through this expanded Medicaid, or whether we at least keep the Medicaid beast in the cage it's in now.
Right. Okay, we're going to move right along now. I could sit around and talk to you all night about this thing here, Bill, but I've got some listeners who get bored when I stay on the same thing for too long. You know how that goes. So we're going to move to jobs. Vaughn's going to start us off with a question about jobs. Go ahead, Vaughn.
Bill, actually, it's two questions, and I'll just ask one right now. Obamacare is passed. It's been approved by the Supreme Court. I have clients who have 51, 60, 70 employees, and they're not offering any insurance. What are they going to do in order to keep from getting hammered economically trying to pay for insurance for their employees under Obamacare? Or
well,
are they going to do anything?
They're probably going to continue to not offer insurance, and a bunch of your clients are probably going to drop insurance, because Obamacare specifies the exact details of the insurance plans in such a way that will make them very expensive. It will probably be cheaper for most employers to drop their employee-funded insurance and just pay the federal penalty, which is what I think the intent of the act was anyway. I believe it's to break the private insurance industry, not to preserve it.
Wow. Let me ask you a question about the about jobs creation in Missouri. You know, my office is across the street from a more or less newly created broadband internet company, and started out as a telephone company down in Cape Girardeau, Big River Telephone. And they got $24 million in stimulus money, and that was a couple of years ago. By golly, and they've been touted to create 30, 40 jobs, and then the governor came down and had a big welcoming thing and said they're going to create 70 jobs. And to my knowledge, I haven't seen one job. It's been a couple of years, probably going on two and a half, three years, and I think that the only employees in the building that they were given by the city government are employees who were already employed by the company. So we're batting zero for $24 million. What has the effect of the stimulus money coming to Missouri been on jobs creation?
Well, it's been negligible, of course. The government doesn't create jobs. It can't. And any politician, Republican or Democrat, who claims, vote for me and I'll create jobs, is selling you a bunch of nonsense. The government can set the positive environment the private sector needs to grow jobs, and that's it. The stimulus was nothing but a big old pork barrel program. It was a payoff to every Democratic interest group and to well-connected corporations. It was never about job creation, and it didn't do it.
I can see that just looking out my window across the street. So the city and the taxpayers who shelled out that money and the folks who in my area, St. Francis County, and the surrounding areas who are waiting for these 60 to 70 jobs promised by the governor, are you saying essentially that that's just a bunch of hocus pocus and they're not going to materialize?
They were sold a bunch of hot air. It's never going to happen. It was a bill of goods. Look, this governor has promised jobs, jobs, jobs. And according to most reports, Missouri leads the nation in tax credits for well-connected businesses and all of that. And we also lead the nation in job loss. These things are not a coincidence. The government doesn't belong in the private sector. It ruins it. It distorts things. Even well-intentioned politicians, if such exist, with job creation bills, are lousy entrepreneurs. It's not the role of the government. The role of the government is create basic fair rules. And all you're getting from Obama, all you're getting from Nixon is they're using your tax money as their own political slush fund and to pay off well-connected industries, and it shouldn't be surprising that we get no jobs from it.
Wow.
Okay, so let's get a little bit specific here, Bill. You know, create a nice environment for private industry to grow jobs and blah blah blah. So what do we do to create that environment?
Four key steps would move Missouri from the least business-friendly state, according to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, to the most business-friendly. One, we have to become a right-to-work state. Two, we have to have comprehensive judicial reform, including a loser-pays tort system. Three, we've got to get rid of the income tax, especially after this judicial decision, and replace it with a low, flat sales tax. And fourth, we have to have comprehensive regulatory reform. We do those four things, we can move from worst to first in business friendliness, and the jobs will come.
Okay, so regulatory reform, I think everybody pretty much knows what that's all about. Talk to me specifically then about what we're going to do when we get rid of the income tax. We got to have some money, don't we?
Yeah, we have to go to a sales tax. The states that have a sales tax as their means of generating state income as opposed to an income tax are doing much better economically than the states that have an income tax. States like Texas, Florida, Tennessee are doing extremely well. 40% of the jobs created over the last several years have been in Texas alone. The income tax is a tremendous tool of political corruption and control. Look what happened in Obamacare. The Supreme Court essentially ruled that the government can use the tax code to regulate behavior that is beyond its power to regulate otherwise. That should frighten anyone who cares about constitutional government. That alone is worth getting rid of the income tax. But every study that's ever been done shows that you eliminate an income tax, you get substantial economic growth.
Good. We're going to start kind of a weekly feature here on Missouri Grassroots Radio, maybe once every 2 weeks, called the Fair Tax Show. I might have you along for a little bit of discussion on that one of these times after you get unbusy with what you're doing.
Sounds good.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if the governor himself would come along and join in on that or not. What is the relationship now between this tort law and jobs?
Well, one of the key factors that businesses look at when they're deciding to relocate is the legal environment, because litigation is one of the chief expenses that businesses face and insuring for it, and they want a predictable legal environment. I'll give you an example. In the early 90s, Texas was one of the worst places in the country to be sued, but they engaged in comprehensive tort reform. Now they're one of the most business-friendly states in the nation with their judicial system, and it's really boosted their job creation. In Missouri, we pay a lawyer's tax on everything we do. Businesses are constantly getting sued with frivolous lawsuits, and Missouri is one of the easiest states for frivolous lawsuits to be filed, one of the hardest to get rid of them, and therefore one of the states where our insurance rates go up the most because of it. We're all paying a lawyer tax every day on every good and service we engage in. We just don't see it.
Okay, we got a caller here, Taylor from Park Hills. She wants to back us up just a little bit and ask something about the Medicaid system. Go ahead, Taylor.
Okay, I'm 19, and I just got off of Medicaid when I turned 19. Is there any way under, like, Obamacare or something that I can get insurance, health insurance?
Well, Obamacare has a variety of options which they claim are going to make insurance better and easier for you. The fact of the matter is, at 19, you could go out and buy health insurance for next to nothing. As long as we don't have the increased regulations Obamacare is going to put on. I buy my insurance privately from out of state. I'm nearly 50. Mine's going to cost a lot more than yours is. Yours will be nothing. But if all the insurance policies have to offer every bell and whistle that Obamacare is going to require, even you will have a hard time affording it.
Right, yeah.
And this is something that a lot of people, I mean, even listening tonight, and we're talking to grassroots, hardcore conservative people out here, but a lot of people don't realize that Obamacare isn't giving you anything for free. It is requiring you to pay a premium for insurance.
And it's dictating the exact terms of your insurance policy.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So it would be like saying, you want to go buy a used car, but the government says, no, we're not going to allow you. We're going to make you buy a car, but we're going to make you buy a new one, and you're going to have all these options on it, whether you want them or not. Well, that will drive up your costs for no reason that's a benefit to you, and that's what Obamacare is doing.
So, okay, Taylor's gone. I wanted to throw that back over to her, but that's fine. We'll go back to where we were. So you're in favor of the fair tax for the state the sales tax and for tort reform. Now, I'm going to use this as a segue into another question that I had for you about a specific bill that I have problems with. Vaughn kind of loves it, but her and I had a heated discussion on it last week that's on the governor's desk for signature right now. It's Missouri House Bill 1108. And you're probably familiar with it. It basically says that a cell phone company can or even must release to law enforcement your location if there's a bona fide emergency, blah, blah, blah. You familiar with the bill?
Just in general terms.
My problem with that bill, and I want to know how you feel about this, is Clause 2, which exempts the cell phone company basically from any damage they cause me for following this particular act. How are you with any kind of legislation that exempts any entity from tort for the damage they cause?
Well, if the government's making them do something, it makes no sense to me that they can then be sued for doing it. That's the government's call, not the company's call. To me, the question is whether or not the government should be allowed to do it. But if the government says, you've got to give us this information, and if you give the government that information and suffer harm from it, it seems to me the responsible party is the government, not the company.
Okay. Well, that makes sense to me. I don't know. Teachers, for example, am I wrong? They're immune from lawsuit for calling up family services and saying they suspect this child being beaten.
That's correct, that they're required to do that.
So there is a ton of damage that can be done there to me by this teacher who either negligently or maliciously does this. Can I then not do anything?
I believe there's an exception for malicious or knowingly false.
Okay.
Now, if the teacher's just wrong, that's part of it. But you see, that's the dilemma we're in. If we're requiring people to do something, we can't turn around and sue them for it. So the question is, do we require them to do it in the first place, or do we give them standards for it?
Okay.
And I think that's the better way to go about it. That's the trouble. Every law passed has unintended consequences. And the situation you've described, for every child that perhaps you save from abuse, you do run the risk of falsely accusing a family and maybe breaking it up where something didn't happen. These things are balancing acts.
Well, yeah, and from my, you know, from my ultra-libertarian point of view, that's bad law anyway. I mean, I think we're good people. I'm good guy. You're a good guy. So we would, of course, call some law enforcement if we felt a child was being abused, or even if I felt my next door neighbor was beating his wife or beating her husband. But I want to stop short in my very bordering on anarchist libertarian state of making any law that requires one citizen to rat on another for anything.
I think it is a dangerous it is dangerous, but then you have to ask yourself, what about situations with particularly vulnerable people? For example, should a prison guard have to report if he sees one prisoner stab another? That's still compelling speech. But I think most of us would say he should.
Well, he should, but then that is a condition of his employment, not a condition of his just being a citizen.
No, it's not. But, I mean, same thing with a teacher. You accept certain responsibilities, and you're given certain immunities. We have to decide where those lines are drawn. And
right.
I'm not sure we do a perfect job with it, and we do have to be very careful with it. I don't like the idea. In general, I'm with you. I don't like the idea of making citizens report things to the government.
Okay, we've had a caller here who had a question and then didn't hang on to ask it, and they want to back up again to Obamacare. But tell us about these corporations and or groups of citizens who have waivers. What is a waiver?
Well, a waiver just means you're exempted from some provision of the law. And they have passed out tons of waivers to unions who supported the law, to certain companies that supported the law. And indeed, at one point, I think I read that a large percentage, like 30 or 40% of the waivers granted, at least in the first year, were actually granted to businesses and groups within Nancy Pelosi's home district.
Right, and Harry Reid's.
Yeah, so,
I think Harry Reid's whole state was exempted.
So, you know, it's a situation where we're all supposed to be equal before the law, but some get to be more equal than others if you're connected properly.
I like that. And then we have another question here, and we're jumping around here because of the way the calls are coming in. And in my eyes, this is the biggest push for the fair tax. But what the caller says, if we reduced government, what do we do with all those unemployed government workers?
Well, first of all, I do not believe that the government's primary job is to employ people who ought to be employed in the private sector. Remember, every job that we have to pay for with government is paid for with money drawn out of the private sector. The government is a parasitic organism. It does not create, it draws off. When those government workers are moved into the private sector, they become net taxpayers, not net tax takers. So that's good for all of us.
I agree. And that's that. That is something that I say anytime I go and give a fair tax talk somewhere is, this is one of the primary pluses of the fair tax. You know, you got these guys who say, my first year in office, I'm going to cut the federal budget by $1 trillion. Well, you know, no, you're not. Not without something that's building the private sector as rapidly as you're shrinking the public sector, because you're talking about putting another 1.5 million people on the unemployment rolls, and politically, you just ain't going to do that.
Yeah, you have to have a system that encourages the private sector to build up. One of the natural allies, I think, for the fair tax is anyone in manufacturing. Anyone in a private sector union that builds something ought to be big fair tax supporters, because it's the best way to level the playing field with foreign competitors. We can grow our whole market if we just make it easier for companies to do business here and remove the tax penalty they face.
Absolutely right. It's 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Folks, this is some good call-ins. You guys go ahead and get in on this. Education in Missouri, you know, we just keep – of course, Missouri's Constitution requires that we spend a percentage of our – 25%, isn't it? Yeah, the Missouri Constitution requires we spend 25% of all of our budget on education. And Bill, it just keeps getting worse and worse, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
What are we going to do about that?
Well, monopolies don't work. That's the problem. We have an education monopoly, and monopolies don't innovate. The two biggest education bureaucracies in this state are St. Louis and Kansas City. They're also the two worst school systems in the state, and indeed, my hometown of Kansas City was recently rated the worst school district in the nation. And it's not about money. We spend an average of $9,500 per year per student to educate kids in Missouri, except for Kansas City and St. Louis, where we spend $16,000 per year per student. So money isn't the issue. The issue is the stale monopoly. So I want to put vouchers in the hands of every parent and let them decide where they educate their kids, public schools, private schools, charter schools, technical schools, homeschooling. Let them decide and let schools compete for the money.
All right, I'm going to throw you in a question here that was not on your outline, but I think you're ready for it. There's a push now in some circles in Jeff City to unify into a party ticket the governor, lieutenant governor job. How, you want to pick your lieutenant governor?
I think it would be a bad idea. I mean, in theory it sounds good, but I think it's a bad idea to give more strength to the party structure in this state and take more away from the voters. Let the voters handle it.
Okay. That was just a simple yes or no question, and I think most of the people here agree with you on that. What's the number one problem in the state if we haven't touched on it already?
It's the same thing as in the country. It's the loss of freedom. Government suffocating our ability to do what we want to do, even to use our own property. We have to now stand in line and say, Mother, may I, to the government. We need less rules, less restrictions, less bureaucracy, and more freedom.
So you're going to get up there. This is all great talk, Bill. You're going to get up there in Jefferson City, and you're going to have a legislature kind of like the one we were just disappointed by. What are you going to do about that?
Well, I'm going to provide leadership. It's very tough to lead from the legislature. Never in American history have we seen major reform come through a legislature of one party over a president or governor opposing it in the other party. But with a Republican governor with a clear vision, and I have not been vague about what I'm going to do for the last 18 months, I've given the same message everywhere. They will help me. They will fall in line. We will not. We may have some bumps in the road, but we will move in the right direction. And remember, people are always getting termed out. The folks elected in 10 were more conservative than those that termed out. And I can tell you, I've met most of the people running this year, and they're more conservative than the folks terming out. We have a window of opportunity to do great things.
That's the ones that are running who aren't running for a House because they termed out of the Senate or vice versa.
Correct.
Here's a caller question here. Backing up again, I hate to jump around like this, but that's the way the calls come in. How would the voucher system improve the education system?
The voucher system improved the education system by actually giving us an incentive to improve. If you have the only restaurant in town and you're terrible, you can probably stay in business. But if there are five restaurants in town, you're going to get better or you're going to go out of business. Right now, the big school districts in Kansas City and St. Louis are monoliths that don't improve because they don't have to. But if parents could go somewhere else and take their money with them, they will get better or they will go away.
So just in case we have a listener on the line who doesn't know what we're talking about, a voucher system, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, is, okay, here we are. We're the state of Missouri. It costs us $16,400 to educate your child. Here's your $16,400. That's good at any school you want to go to.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the exact number. That's exactly right. It is essentially like an education card or an education check that you can use, and you get to decide where it gets used, as opposed to right now being bound by law to a certain district.
And I was talking to John Robinson Thursday night, who's running to join you up there, and he was a little concerned about this because he was afraid schools would, you know, it was back to the sports thing, you know, schools would start attracting, you know, some schools would attract sports stars and some schools would attract artists, and that's all right.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
I don't care. Yeah.
I don't care if one school focuses on athletics, if that's what the parents value. I don't care if the other school focuses on history or math or science. A quality education doesn't mean the same education.
Right.
Different kids have different skills. Different parents have different priorities. But I think the argument we should leave our two largest school districts absolute sewers.
Yep.
To me, it's just beyond understanding.
And no different than it is now. If your number one priority is for your kid to get a solid academic education, you don't really give a crap whether that school has a good basketball team or not.
Listen, I was so irritated as a kid. I grew up in Rogers, Arkansas. I was in public school. We didn't have enough English books to go around. We couldn't take them home. But we had an athletic stadium that would do many colleges proud.
Yep.
I hated that, and if I could have gone somewhere else, I would have.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'm going to move on here. Well, actually, not. I'm going to go ahead and take a break now. You'll hang on with us for another 20 minutes?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to take a break now because when I come back, I want to back all the way up, and we're going to close out with some more specifics about this Supreme Court thing, not only the Obamacare thing, but the Arizona thing from last week. So let's take a break. We're going to come back in just a minute, and we'll deal with that, and then we'll let you go. Thanks.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
With the August primary looming in about 7 weeks, we find the time is running out on who we vote for. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Do the representatives we send to Jefferson City really care what you think, or do they do the bidding of the special interest groups and lobbyists? It's your choice. You can elect a true citizen legislator or an establishment politician who takes his marching orders from the party elitists and his donors. Either way, time is running out for our state and country. Hear the clock of freedom ticking? I'm Terry Varner, and I approve this message.
I've got a feeling that the night is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death!
It is Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. We're talking to Bill Randles tonight. Bill wants to be your next governor. Missouri Grassroots Coalition sponsors this radio show. I do not speak for Missouri Grassroots Coalition. I speak for Dave, and Missouri Grassroots Coalition does not endorse candidates, but Bill Randles is the Dave Court-approved candidate for governor in the state of Missouri. We make no bones here. We don't claim to be unbiased here. We don't claim to be anything but one-sided here. We're here to get grassroots constitutional candidates elected. Thanks for being along tonight, Bill.
My pleasure.
We've got one more question from the callers, and then we're going to cut the callers off so that I can finish this thing up with you on this Supreme Court. A caller wants to know, how would you get people off welfare in Missouri?
You know, that's a great question, and it's one of the toughest challenges we have. The federal government sets the welfare standards. We would have to get a waiver or lobby them for a standard. But I'll tell you, the best plan I've heard to get people off welfare actually comes from Marion Barry, the mayor of D.C. I heard him on Fox Business about a year ago, and he said he believes there ought to be a five-year lifetime limit on welfare for the able-bodied. And I agree with that. There has to be some sort of deadline. If people believe they can just stay on these programs their whole lives, now I'm talking about able-bodied here, people here, not kids, not the disabled, not the elderly, but if people who ought to be working, ought to be out in the private sector, know they don't have to, many of them won't. And that we have to give them that incentive.
Okay, I I can hear it now. I can hear it now from my liberal friends down at Denny's at Saturday Morning Coffee. So it's six. It's been 6 years now, and you've got 7,000 people on the streets of Springfield, Missouri, starving to death because you've cut them off. What are you going to do about that?
Yeah, listen. If you've got 7,000 able-bodied adults who in 4 years can't, 5 years can't pick up a skill or find a job, I'll tell you what, have them walk by the want ads even now, and we'll find them a job.
Okay.
You have to have the motivation to get out there and do something. And again, we're not talking about the disabled. We're talking about people just like you and me who aren't in the private sector and who have no motivation to get in the private sector.
Because they've been paid for all their lives.
Of course. Look,
I was
paid not to work.
Yeah, I was telling a sad story here. I think it was the show I had Ed Emery on that I led off with this example. I went down to the 7-Eleven, and I was standing there in line, and there was a woman in front of me. I mean, it made me so angry, and at the same time, it broke my heart, who was teaching her 8, maybe 9-year-old kid how to use the EBT card.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, this is the next generation that we're doing this for.
I'll make this story real quick. There was a substitute teacher that's a good conservative who told me that she had to teach a lesson in government class in high school down in Joplin, and the curriculum actually required her to have the whole class do a worksheet about how they could apply for welfare benefits.
Incredible. Just absolutely incredible. Okay, I want to back up now and go right back to where we started. Has what happened in the last week, and I'm talking about both Arizona and Affordable Health Care Act, forever changed the relationship between the states and the Supreme Court?
Well, forever is a long time, but I would say it's continued the very unfortunate trend that started with Commerce Clause cases about 80 years ago of subjugating the states and the individuals to the federal government. And we're rapidly reaching the point where it is fair to ask what limits really exist on the federal government at all.
Okay, so what should we expect now? I mean, we've spent quite a bit of time in this show, and you've spent quite a bit of time studying and knowing everything there is to know about state nullification. But what can we truly expect? I mean, it's enough to know how to push back against the federal government, but when we're pushing back against all three branches at the same time, what do we do?
Well, that's the problem. Our system was only meant to work by electing the right people to office. Our founders wrote on that consistently. There's no magic form of civil disobedience that will work long term. The pushing back has to be until you can get right-thinking policies or get them to rethink fundamental assumptions. This upcoming election is critical. I heard you talking about this before I came on, but y'all were right on the money. Anybody who thinks there's no difference between Obama and Romney, just look at the Supreme Court. The next president is going to have a serious number of appointments, and the left has done a much better job of appointments than the right. We were taught in law school that most presidents make two mistakes. They appoint their justices too old, and they don't know exactly what they're going to do. Well, the past two Democratic presidents have been Yale Law, Bill Clinton, and Harvard Law, Barack Obama. How's their coalition holding together? Their justices are voting right down the line every time, and they know it. We've got to get the right kind of president in, put in the right kind of justices.
I want to stop for just a minute because I'm entertained. You said that. I listened to your show last week, and I've actually wanted to hear you talk about this, and I never have except just to mention that it occurred. But tell us about your association with Obama.
Well, I actually was at Harvard Law School at the same time he was. I was a year ahead of him. We had one class together. It was a 12-person constitutional law seminar. I was, of course, the only conservative. So we butted heads a number of times, and I took his measure. I wasn't impressed with the man. I don't think there's a great deal of depth there. I think stories about his vast legal knowledge are wildly overrated. But he has very carefully assimilated the lessons we were taught. And we were taught that the best form of government is a social democracy like Europe, even veering toward Marxism. We were taught how to work the bureaucracy, how to avoid the democratic structures, how to work the judiciary, and he learned those lessons very well. And if we don't start electing people that know these systems as well as the people on the left do, we're going to keep losing the battle. We keep sending people unarmed into a gunfight.
I was having a discussion last week with a fellow who disagreed with me on several things and is, in fact, an attorney. And I told him that, and I didn't really have any knowledge of it except for the fact that I am familiar with an awfully lot of attorneys, and so I feel it to be a fact. But you're telling us that that's what they teach in law school nowadays.
Yeah, we were literally taught that democracy doesn't work, at least not on the hard issues. You've got to use the bureaucracy and the courts to get things done. And they cite things like Brown versus Board of Education, which is not
right.
An example. But they think that we, the great unwashed masses, are ignorant and need control. That's the whole purpose of the regulatory state, is to take power out of the hands of the people and their elected representatives and invest it in the hands of a permanently trained cadre of elites that know better than we do. That's the whole philosophy of the left. The elites know better. They happen to be the elites, and so they will tell us what to do, and we'll be the better off for it.
Put you on the spot here. Are you going to head to Washington when you're done in Jeff City?
Let me put it like this. I am allergic to committees. I have no desire to be in any legislative branch of government.
What if you could be that good up there? What if you could do us that much good?
I don't think I could. I do not think I would be effective in a gaggle of other people. I'm built to be the executive, and that's why I'm running for governor.
You've been in a legislative setting at all before?
I have not. But as a lawyer in a big firm, I've had more than my fill of committees, and trust me, I'm no good at them.
Okay, Bill, you take up to 10 minutes of the 15 we have left and tell us where we can find you on the net, where we can see you in the upcoming weeks, and how to give you money and get a hold of you.
Well, I appreciate that. My website is billrandles.com, and you spell Randles like candles with an R. My website is unusual for most politicians. I actually list my events there. So you can go on and look on events and find out when I'm going to be nearby. I do more speaking events probably than anybody else. I answer more questions than anybody else, so I'd love to meet you. I'd love to answer your questions in person. And you can give actually online, or it tells you the address you can send it to. And there are no limits in terms of how small or how much, and we would appreciate your help on that. You know, this election, politicians are fond of saying that this election is the most important of our lifetimes, but I think most of us realize it is, even those of us who haven't spent our lifetime in politics. This is about how free we're going to be, who's going to be in charge. I believe we're nearing a tipping point. I think the red tape we're finding from Washington and Jefferson City is on the verge of suffocating the private sector in a way it may not be able to recover from if we don't reverse it soon. The loss of freedoms we're facing, we may not be able to recover from if we don't get there soon. We actually have a situation going on in Washington where people are arguing with a straight face the right to free contraceptives outweighs people's religious liberties. We have so turned on its head our fundamental values. We have people who believe that the government should micromanage your business, micromanage your property, and that you only have it at the sufferance of the government. We've got to change this mindset. We have got to get back to the notion of who is the servant and who is the master.
All right, folks, that's Bill Randles. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and I'm telling you, I have been saying since we started this project to vet as many candidates as we could about 2 months ago, I've told you over and over again, I've blogged it over and over again, if you want to make a difference, conservative brothers and sisters, you will do it at the primary. It is a, look at the Romney situation, it is a no-brainer, folks, what we're going to do in October. The difference is going to be between these three guys that are running for governor. The difference is going to be between two or three guys that are running for your state senate. And that's where you're going to make a difference, because two of those guys are bad and one of them is good. And it's just that simple. It's going to be at the primary where you take this thing back. So do not get complacent. We got Bill Randles here. He's Dave Court approved, and I think he's grassroots approved. You've got two other guys out there who are going to create jobs with tax breaks and incentives, who are not in favor of the fair tax totally. One of them is kind of halfway in favor of it sometimes. So this is the guy. This is Bill Randles. You've heard him tonight. You've had a chance to ask him questions. And I want you to remember his name. I want you to go to his website, send him some money, give him a call, go out and see him talk. He's quite exciting to see. And we wish you the best of luck, Bill. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I enjoyed it more than you can imagine. Good night.
Good night.
That's it, folks. That was Bill Randles. He's running for governor. And like I said, I'm not making any bones about it. I'm not here to be unbiased. I'm here to help you get your state back out of the hands of the liberals and pseudo conservatives, and that's what we're here for. And we don't have any qualms about saying who's good for that, and quite frankly, who's not. Okay, that's going to be pretty close to a wrap. I'm going to do a break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the next week and some of the guests we've got coming up here on the Hour of Truth.
Jobs, taxes, traditional family values, education, protecting the unborn, Second Amendment, tort reform. These are the issues facing Missourians today. Hi, I'm Terry Varner. As your next state senator, I will continue to work to change government by preserving our liberties, reining in wasteful spending, and making the state of Missouri responsive to its citizens. I am a pro-life constitutionalist who believes our state and federal constitution are there for our protection from overreaching government. I firmly believe that only by ignoring those documents has the government at all levels been able to trample on the liberty of its people. I would appreciate your vote this August 7th. I'm Terry Varner, and I approve this message.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. It's Monday, the 2nd of July. It is Independence Day. We talked about that a little earlier on the show. If you just got here, it was actually July 2nd that the Second Continental Congress voted 12-0 with one colony abstaining to declare independence from Great Britain. The declaration was signed a couple of days later, and so we celebrate on the 4th. But this is the day of the fateful vote, and this is the day when you should resolve to take your country back. Resolve that we are a people free of state, and that the state has no power that we do not give it, and that we as a people cannot delegate to that state any power which we did not have to start with. Do you have the power? Do you have the power to go to your neighbor's house and take money from him and give it to your other neighbor? Then you can't delegate that power to your government. You cannot delegate to your government any power that you don't have to start with. Okay. The Hour of Truth, Mondays and Thursdays. Vaughn Carriker with the Show Me Common Sense. Why Are You Pimping My Kid tomorrow and every Tuesday? Not Why Are You Pimping My Kid every Tuesday, but Show Me Common Sense every Tuesday. Lisa Payne Nager, The Culture Vigilante, every Wednesday at 7 o'clock. We're back on Thursday. On Friday night, every week, a very, very lively roundtable discussion. Vaughn, Lisa, and I at a minimum almost every Friday night. I think Mike Smith's going to drop by this Friday night. We're going to have a good fair tax talk / education session. And then on Fridays following that, we'll have things like that going on. We've been talking to Bill Randles tonight. He's the next Missouri governor. This Thursday is open. My plan right now is to have another of your favorites, a free speech night where you get to call in on any topic about politics that you want to. You're liberal, call in. you're conservative, call in. We'll fight about it, and we'll have a good time. That Thursday is open, though. If you are a grassroots candidate and you have not been approached yet and you want to get out to our audience, give myself or Lisa a call, and we'll get you on. Monday the 9th, going to be a very good show. I got Mr. Sloan, the Sloan Ranger, coming along. This is a guy that you're going to get a kick out of. He has spent a number of years researching an item that actually was originated by John Madison, James Madison, and it's called the State Repeal Amendment. Madison proposed that a number of states could get together and vote to repeal any federal regulation. Now, this isn't, they don't get together and vote for a constitutional amendment. This would be a constitutional amendment that would give states a right to repeal any federal regulation. So the federal government comes down and says, you can't have incandescent light bulbs anymore. Well, in the Sloan Rangers world, 26 states representing more than half of the population could just say, well, that's not a rule anymore. I don't know that I want to go 26 states. That's awfully close to a 51% democracy to me. But I like the idea. Thursday the 12th, we're going to talk to Adam Warren. He's running for Attorney General, and that's going to be a very, very good talk. And then Monday 16th, speaking of Attorney General, we're going to talk to Ed Martin. And we're also going to have Mike Moon on. Mike Moon is running against Billy Long to get things right in the U.S. House of Representatives. So that's it. That's pretty much a wrap on what's coming up on the Hour of Truth. I've had a good time tonight. I hope you have. I hope Bill Randall's had a good time. We always have a good time when we talk to him. He's been very liberal with his time with us. So Lisa had him on about education last week. That's why I kind of avoided that. Vaughn had him on about some of the legal issues, the tort reforms and things like that, so I avoided that. But I did want to get his take as an attorney on the Supreme Court thing, and I think we pretty much covered that, and I like the way he talks about it. Today is Independence Day. We've come a long way from July 2nd, 1776. When 56 men signed a document, or took a vote, that they followed with a signed document 2 days later, that said, we are a people free of state, that we form a state by the will of the people, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and that government has no power that we don't give it. And now the great-great-great-great-granddaughter of one of the signers of that Declaration of Independence is the chief spokeswoman for Obamacare, telling us that rather than being independent of government, we need to become ever more dependent on government to a point where we become totally dependent on government. Remember this, anything that a government gives you, any right granted to you by other than nature, any right granted to you by the king, the president, the legislature, or the pope can be withdrawn by that same person. This is Dave. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Hour of Truth, and this is the end. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.